everyone, and welcome to today's podcast episode of Let's Talk Cloud Networking. Again, I'm scripted with your hosts, myself, John Gonzalez, and Numan Mustafa. Today, we're really pleased to be joined by two of Aviatrix's finest and senior cloud networking and security architects, Edith Vanneville and Dennis Hagens, both based in EMEA, to candidly share their cloud networking knowledge, their customer learnings, their experiences, but also give our audience a sense of how customers are thinking and approaching their cloud journey and tackling what we would call the most fundamental but critical cloud networking and security constructs. So hi, Dennis. Hi, Edith, and welcome to the podcast today. Please take a few minutes, introduce yourselves, your roles in Aviatrix, and let's start by, you know, giving us a sense of how are customers in EMEA using cloud, and are they in one or more clouds?
Hey, John, before Edith and Dennis starts, so we have two more guests today who don't like tea. So they are more, they are here in the tea podcast, but they're like coffee guys. am I correct, Dennis?
These guys are hardened Central Europeanists, right? They're going to go for their strong beer, their white Belgian beer and strong German beer.
That's right. Definitely a coffee guy, absolutely.
Yep, 100%. 100%.
Go for it, Edith and Dennis. Start with your intro and then we can go from there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Dennis, I give you the honors to get started.
Thanks, Edith. So, I've been with Aviatrix for close to 2 years now, helping out a lot of enterprise customers, as I've been doing throughout my entire career when it comes to network and network security challenges. So obviously a lot of interesting things we're seeing in EMEA. And I'll let Edith introduce himself so we can dive into that.
Okay, thanks, Dennis. Thank you. My name is Edith van Uvelen, responsible for the technical side of what happens in EMEA over here. And everybody has a little bit their own duty within, let's say, the region of EMEA, which is a pretty vast area. And what we would like to do is to bring our experience. As Dennis mentioned, we have been on board physically, let's say, on the EMEA continent a little bit over 2 years right now. And it's great to share that experience of the last 24 months and also a little bit on how we see things evolving over the next maybe 12 to 18 months.
Fantastic. That's great. So guys, I can't imagine that customer pain points in EMEA moving to cloud or in cloud with a single cloud or multi-cloud is any different to anyone else's any other customer journeys, no matter where they're based in the world. Would you agree with that? Or do you think we have some unique pain points here in EMEA that we need to tackle that may not be so prevalent in other parts of the globe?
I don't know if the pain points are necessarily much different, but from what I've seen across the pond, if you will, I do have some observations that I think are interesting, and that is the uptake of Azure in the large enterprise seemed to me to be more obvious in Europe than what I've seen from my counterparts in the US. So that's one observation I'm keen to share with you.
So why is that? Sorry to cut you off, but why is that? Is the reason, is it basically the Azure teams are more strong? Is it because of the application footprint that enterprises have? What do you think are the key reasons why Azure is on the rise here in EMEA more than US?
So I think partly due to maybe a later adoption of cloud. So Azure had some time to come into the game and mature and had that relationship with the large enterprises in all over the world, of course. When the cloud adoption really started to happen here in EMEA, I think they were in a better position at that time. So I think that the timing is part of that as well as the fact that they have the strong relationship with the large enterprise.
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense because in US, people started with AWS very, very early on, right? And at that point, AWS was the only cloud. And in EMEA, if the cloud adoption started late, where Azure has gotten their act together, they have a very good minimal viable cloud solution. So people would have probably preferred Azure because of their very, very good relationships inside the customers. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So The first time I was exposed probably to the public cloud was somewhere, let's say, medio 2008, when, and I believe AWS was just in its infancy over there. And at that time, I was working for a appliance vendor in the security space. And while we thought it was the end of the appliance, but dealing with our customers on let's say in Europe, it was clearly that the cloud was not going to be significant within in mainland over here. And it's only truly since a couple of years that that adoption really has been fast growing. And to Dennis' point, at that time, let's say back in 2008, there was AWS, there were a couple of companies that even do not longer exist that were putting their first steps into the public cloud. But at that time, of course, it gave Microsoft, with the first introduction of Office 365 in the cloud and the Exchange as the very first one. And then truly Azure was coming in very strong. And it was only really at that moment that quite a lot of European-based enterprises started to have some interest within the cloud. But then, of course, there was competition already. While, you know, fast backwards in 2010, there was hardly any competition. So I believe that's a little bit the change between what we see in North America and also coming into Europe, and also the other points that Dennis mentioned.
Okay, that's cool. Do you see the regulation with EU regulation, especially around GDPR, do you see that as putting people off moving to cloud in EMEA, or more determined to move to cloud because maybe they see security as better security in the cloud for data protection? Or what's your view with customers? What are they doing around that?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, Dennis is is positioned in a much better area where there is a pretty big cloud adoption. I've been looking probably after the more southern part when you take Belgium and going more to the southern part, straight into, let's say, the UAE and so on. And the more south you are going from, let's say, the typical Northern European regions, the more strict it was on putting data within the public cloud. And even when the public cloud was outside of the national territory, that had a lot to do with let's say, legislation that you have over there. And you see it right now, just recently, that those barriers are broken down and that there is much more cloud adoption. If you take countries such as France, you go down into Italy, but also in the Emirates, for example, or just, let's say, the Middle East region, there is a lot of restrictions on where data can reside and what you can mm-hmm. actually do with that one. So there is a lot of cycles spent on doing some triage of the data that can actually be used within a public cloud. So, but on the positive side is that over the last couple of years, we saw improvements on this one, and that resulted truly into a faster cloud adoption because they actually stepped over a couple of steps that you traditionally do. So, and of course, they can learn from others who went already before them, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So there is definitely a lot of change occurring in the more southern part of the EMEA region.
Yeah, I think what I see then maybe in my patches where I'm active is, mm-hmm. So we definitely don't see adoption of cloud as a challenge for GDPR or other regulations, but it is something that will stop the customer and let them think like, okay, how are we going to approach this, right? So mm-hmm. They see the benefits of adopting cloud, public cloud, but they have to figure out, okay, so this game we've been playing on-prem, we know how to deal with this, we know how to set our security constraints, how to audit that. So when we move into cloud, we have to figure out how we can do the same things there. So we've got certain requirements that we need to fulfill in a different way in cloud. That's basically more of a delay in adoption, I suppose, than it is actively choosing to adopt or not to adopt public cloud.
Got it.
Right.
So one question I have though, Dennis and Edas, right? That in EMEA in general, what trend do you see? Do you see that now people are actually aggressively moving to the cloud in the sense that It's a top-down mandate from CIO CTOs, and they are sort of have a deadline in terms of shutting down the data centers, and they have to be out by a certain date, or is it basically they are gradually moving and taking the time? In US, I think a lot of big enterprises, they have it as a mandate to move as quickly as possible, and only applications that cannot be refactored or cannot be moved for whatever reason, they are staying in the on-prem. But otherwise, you know, a lot of enterprises are looking to aggressively move to the cloud, and that hesitancy that used to exist a while back is not there. And the second question is, are they now looking to have one primary cloud and maybe a second and a third, or are they mostly focusing on just get your act together with one cloud and then maybe try to see if you want to go to a second and third cloud? So what maturity level do you see with your bigger mm-hmm. enterprise customers in different parts of the world, Namie?
Yeah, I think all parts of the spectrum, right? But I definitely see a trend towards at least a high level of data center evac, whether that's commodity services to SaaS or whether that's refactoring into PaaS or Kubernetes kind of architectures, or whether that is just lift and shift. We see, or at least I see all of that, and often driven indeed by C-level exec, right? So it is a strategic choice to optimize the landscape, lower the burden of operations, but I think especially to be able to accelerate adoption of other applications, solutions easier in the future instead of dragging a lot of legacy stuff along, basically. And then on the primary versus or the single cloud versus multi-cloud. So when I came on board at Aviatrix, initially I saw a lot of customers here in EMEA that said, we're going to be, and especially on the Microsoft part, I think, we're going to be single cloud, it's going to be Azure all the way. We've got agreements with Microsoft high in the tree of the organization. So we're going to be focusing on that, and we're going to consolidate our landscape on Azure. But I think what I've seen in the past year, past 1.5 years, that message that we've gotten from customers has shifted very much to, yeah, we thought we were going to be single cloud, but now we had to adopt AWS as well, because we did an acquisition of a company and they were already in that platform. Or we need to deal with regulation that says we can't be dependent on a single provider. So actually the shift to multi-cloud has been very aggressive in the past year.
Mm-hmm. No, I can just confirm that also speaking for some of the other regions, that clearly quite a couple of companies, they have, for example, a data center freeze, where it's almost impossible to have additional budget to make enhancements within the current data center. So that's very clear. Some of them do that extra step, as Dennis was pointing out, and they clearly have an evacuation date set forward. That can be 2025, 26. Some of them are more aggressive. And then, of course, we will continue to deal with customers who clearly made a strategy that they need to have a little bit of the on-prem. So that can be a 2+1, a 3+1, that they have 3 public clouds, for example, and 1 or 2 data centers. But what we start to see more and more on that one is that some of them, they do have a data center evac plan, but they will actually move some of the applications, which maybe cannot tolerate the public cloud, or maybe it's simply not efficient or cost effective to change those applications in such a short time, to actually also embrace some colos. So that's a little bit of a trend that we're seeing. Then clearly, as Dennis pointed out, we see a difference over just 18 months, 24 months, clearly from the single cloud to a multi-cloud adoption. And there are various reasons why the multi-cloud is embraced. But what we start to see more and more is that it's effectively the application usage which is driving the cloud selection. So typically what the organizations are offering right now to their clientele, which is the internal consumer, is that menu of truly finding the best meal to do the job. And whether that is in a Google Cloud environment, or it's in Azure or AWS, there might always be a dominant cloud, due to maybe specific applications, maybe the what the company is doing as type of business, but you typically see there is a 15, 25, 35%, which is always spent on other clouds. So to also come back on your question, do you see, for example, that they want to specialize first in one cloud, learn the lessons, and then go to the next cloud? It's very difficult to predict. We have seen both, where, for example, a lot of consultancy work was done. There was a lot of money spent in automating a single cloud. But all that, let's say, effort, of course, it's not lost money, but it's money that went a little bit the wrong direction, I would say, is that they have to do it over and over again for all the other clouds that they will be embracing. And not because they need to embrace the other cloud, it's because their clientele is pushing them to offer additional services which are only available on different clouds. So that's a little bit what we see in various territories.
So this, that's interesting. So when that happens, does the penny finally drop with customers who are almost forced to use different clouds because, as you say, their customers are already in different clouds? Does the penny finally drop? And they wonder, well, hang on, I've had a hard job of moving into one cloud. Now I've got to do it all over again. Yep. Why the hell isn't there something more simple, something more repeatable, like Aviatrix, that can do this for me once, and then it's a rinse and repeat when I need to move into other clouds or other hybrids? Yep.
Indeed, and some of the companies, as Dennis also pointed out, those were environments which were pretty confident that they would be stuck with one single cloud for many years to come. Nobody has that crystal ball, of course. Maybe there were some predictions around that one. But of course, if you started 2.5 years ago and you had to learn your first cloud, while knowing in the back of your mind that that it will be the single cloud for many years to come, and then you're proven wrong, I would say, or the business mandated it, so it's not typically a personal choice, but the business is mandating this one. Of course, you have all the experience that you gained in that single cloud, and that is also leading, as you say, John, to trying to find more efficient tools that can help them to overcome, let's say, the years of consultancy, the years of development of automation that they did on that purpose-built cloud. So they did it once, and they're not going to do it again. So I wouldn't say it's a lesson learned, but if you have the experience, that typically opens up your choice for additional tools that makes your life easy and do not, let's say, force you to reinvent the same wheel over and over again for different clouds.
Right, right.
Yeah, what I can add to that is I've seen over and over again customers tell me, like, I didn't realize there was something out there that could cover these challenges. I figured I needed to deal with the cloud native constructs, what's there, because that's what the cloud service providers give me. I didn't even think about lifting and shifting some on-prem network equipment into the cloud because that doesn't work for me. But then when we explain them our platform, they're like, oh, I didn't even know that exists, and it totally makes sense for the challenges I've been seeing. So that penny definitely drops, if you want to use that term.
Yeah, I think you said something very interesting, that at the end of the day, it's all about applications and users, right? And a lot of these businesses who are taking their workloads into, let's say, one cloud or multiple clouds, their business would have to actually leverage services in any cloud, right? So that earlier mindset of, okay, I'm going to go to one cloud and figure my things out and build my operational discipline and X, Y, Z, is already out of the window, because your business will not wait for you to develop your operational discipline of whether you can support it or not, right? So if you're not able to provide them, they themselves will figure out a way to go and spin up a credit card and start creating shadow ITs in those environments. And I think, some of the things that we have learned from you, based on the top customers in EMEA that you're working with, is, right, for a CIO and a CTO and for cloud architects, platform like Aviatrix are a gift from heaven, because this is where you can actually put together a strategy and architecture right? Where you can say, okay, I'm going to have this common unified architecture that may start with one cloud, doesn't really matter. But if I have to extend, I am not compromising on my security. I'm not compromising on my governance and compliance and visibility. And then I'm not having to have a different army of team that I needs to be trained into all those second, third or fourth cloud, because I need to move with the agility of the business that they're asking for. And they need to be able to tap into the services, because all of these cloud providers are actually evolving rapidly. They're coming out with the new innovations in terms of services pretty much every week. They have all of their niche services. Google specializes in machine learning. Azure have their own product set in terms of enterprise applications. AWS is really, really good for DevOps and the new services they're building. Oracle have their own play. AliCloud wants to have a play where if you have a branch or offices or businesses in mainland China, they provide that access and connectivity into there. So I think what we have learned that this Vitrix platform, where people are trying to strategize and build on the architecture, it's coming out as a really good platform for customers to strategize based on that. So any word on that, and any lessons learned where people would have said, hey, we went down the DIY route, we came across Vitrix and this actually makes sense to pivot and go towards Vitrix in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things you mentioned there is something I've definitely seen over the past couple of months, connectivity into mainland China. A big pain point for a lot of the enterprises that we talk with. And on that use case alone, if you will, the connectivity, connecting into mainland China, I have three active implementations running right now just on that topic. So that's something we've seen a lot. The other thing about how to embrace the cloud, one of the things I've noticed with enterprise is that DevOps mindset of let's go build and put everything together ourselves. That is great if you're building a single application stack or something like that. But we see that with the enterprise, the application landscape is much more complex. They've got a lot of lot more moving parts, a lot of more different teams. So they've actually got a much larger challenge than an individual application or DevOps team has. And that's something where we see that the adoption of the platform has been very helpful.
Mm-hmm. No.
What?
Yeah, just to add on top of this one, it's a real example. It's a customer of ours that became a customer summertime last year. So it's pretty recent, I would say. And at that time, they were even embracing the very first cloud. So if I recall correctly, it was Azure at that time. So it was really the first footsteps within the public cloud, and they were moving actively applications into that one. And everything went pretty fine. But fast forward from summer last year, 9 months on top, they had to embrace two additional clouds. Knowing also that, let's say, the core business that that company is doing is not IT related on this one, but it's in the energy sector on that one. So, the skills gap, was something that they needed to take into account. And one cloud was already a pretty challenging task to embrace, let alone that in a span of 6 months and less, they had to embrace two additional clouds. And I truly believe that without the help of Vitrix, it would have been almost an insurmountable task in doing that one. In addition, by coincidence, it was today, and there was a customer also in Europe, and they were doing it more the traditional way. So they had to connect the two different clouds together across a couple of different regions, and it was based on traditional networking with a lot of BGP in between. And what I saw is that it was really hard. It reminded me of the old days, I would say, with the traditional BGPs, with independent devices exchanging BGPs, and to wrap your head again around, /22, what type of networks are in there? /21, is it this one? Does it sit in there, or is it the other network? Is it summarized correctly? It was really hard. And if you then, for example, compare that one with the common layer that we have across regions, across clouds, you know, it's adding so much in the simplicity on how you can control your routes through the different CSPs and also within a single CSP, the different regions. So for me, it was a good reminder on how things could be really difficult if you still stay, let's say, with the traditional node-based routing.
Right. And it's the, I think customers and prospects are starting to realize now the value of having the commonality, the repeatable architecture, the enhanced capabilities for networking and security. That's like gold dust nowadays, because it adds so much value to the customer in terms of, you know, things that the customers don't have to worry about. They can focus on their core competencies, whether that be financial, whether that be energy, whether that be whatever sector they're in, and let the experts focus on the infrastructure layer to get you that agility that you want to take advantage of those higher level cloud provided services, to accelerate your business growth. I think it's starting to, that mindset is starting to change, certainly in the folks that I've been talking to, especially here in EMEA, and they're starting to realize that, hang on, I don't have that competency. B, I don't want that competency. You know, my competency lies elsewhere. My business goals lie elsewhere. I just want to use, you know, anything that's going to be repeatable, anything that's going to give me enhancements, and then, you know, I'll take advantage on top of that with different types of services to accelerate my business. And exactly. And I think this is where Aviatrix is, has a big part to play, is playing a big part, and is in, and is, you know, providing the value that folks want to see.
Yeah.
One more thing, Dennis and Edith, I wanted to find out from you guys. So a lot of architects, right? So I think in many enterprises, what I've seen is, the way they have done this is they have teams, right? So they have a team that specializes in Azure. They have a team that specializes in AWS. And it's just the way things have organically grown into an enterprise, right? So I'm not saying it's the right thing or wrong thing, but this is how they have done it. And the way they do it is they have, you know, cloud architects that are responsible for Azure because they think of it Azure as a product. And similarly for AWS, they have a different architect. And when it comes to about having this repeatable architecture, right? One of the things that I've seen CIOs and CTOs and business decision makers that they have basically coached their teams is they don't want a vendor lock-in, right? Whether it's about application, whether it's about infrastructure, they want to be able to abstract and they want to be able to build their application in such a way that if today, tomorrow they have to move to a different cloud, they're not locked into it. Now the dilemma is this though, right? That is, let's say if you have an Azure architect, right, who is day in, day out working with Azure teams in terms of guidance and recommendation, you know, by design, they will say, okay, yeah, just to give you an example, right, you know, Azure may recommend VWAN, for example, right, AWS may recommend TGW, you know, GCP will come and say, hey, leverage my global VPC because I'm global in nature. Alibaba Cloud will have their own CEN type transit solutions, right? So what would be your advice, right? Because I know that people sometimes have to do it and fail in order to come to a right approach. But in this day and age, right, it's about all about agility and getting the right architecture in place as quickly as possible. So what would be your advice in those cases to those architects on how they should be architecting, where they are not actually bogged down, and how can they make life easier for their day-to-day operations? So based on the experiences that you have, what would be your advice?
Yeah, I think two words really, zoom out. So what I've seen many times, what you're describing, Noman. So, okay, we need to solve a particular application need in Azure. Therefore, we're gonna make an architecture based on a couple of VNets or within a VNet, and that's the end of it, move on to the next project. So what I think architects always have done in the on-prem space and should be doing in the enterprise is, first of all, zoom out and come at it from a business need and look at the bigger picture. Try to understand how does our entire landscape look like, not how does an application or a small set of applications, or in this case, a particular region or a particular cloud look like, but what does the entire landscape entail? And then from there, work top down. Basically, I see some organizations fall in the trap of solving a pain directly and then move on to the next pain instead of taking that step back and designing the infrastructure to be able to support all of the applications that come on top of it. So I think that's the takeaway I would want to give anyone that's listening here.
Cool. And guys, have you seen any sort of odd, abnormal, strange, funny things out there that folks are trying to do in cloud that you think, oh my goodness, that's hilarious?
All sorts of things.
Give an example of something.
Oh yeah. So I think one of the artifacts of the fact that you're not taking the bigger picture into account and designing your infrastructure to deal with any challenge is that, okay, we now have a application that is running somewhere, needs a connection to a third party. Okay, let's build a VPN there. Okay, now we need to connect into an on-prem database. Okay, let's build a VPN there. And maybe they're not even designing these individual connections properly, like taking high availability into account. And so what we see that customers that have different teams and not architecting their network holistically, if you will, end up with is basically this complex mesh of all kinds of connectivity without having a common security layer. So I've seen all kinds of designs which make me wonder how they got there. And when I ask the customer, the answer is always the same. Yeah, it kind of grew that way, right? It happened to us more than we planned to be in this stage. So a lot of these type of connections or that kind of connectivity I've seen.
Yeah, that's a common answer. We've just organically grown that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, why on earth didn't you stop it long, long time ago? Why has it got to this point?
or actually to bring, let's say, your knowledge of the last 20, 25 years, depending your age, and to work with things that you used to work with on the on-prem and hoping that you will achieve the same type of efficiency on the on-prem while knowing that you will never be able to get to the agility what the cloud is promising. So it's not really that it's bad, but and typically those people will realize over time, but maybe it's an unnecessary step that was taken. And probably there is a very good excuse, just as it would in Dennis' case, it's somehow grew up on them, where maybe 3 years ago, they started with the very first IPsec connect to the cloud, everything very nicely and easy done, just a couple of test instances and so on. But then, of course, the business started booming. The direction to the cloud was becoming effectively within the organization or effective within the organization. But that still old traditional thing of 3 years ago, which used to be maybe a quick and dirty type of thing, well, it lived through that type of migration. But clearly, it created some hurdles. It becomes overly complex. And then it's really time to change. So, and that's where really Aviatrix comes around of building that or closing that gap between, let's say, the yesteryear type of implementation to the tomorrow type of implementation.
Yeah, and actually, I see that complexity accelerating right now because. Yeah. Previously, the cloud was often considered a place where you run your workloads. But more and more, I see with my customers that they're saying, we are abandoning our traditional WAN, and we are just going to tie everything to cloud, and that's going to be our central connectivity layer. And that kind of accelerates that complexity if you don't have a plan. So that's definitely something we've seen customers tangled up on.
Yep.
Great. Edas and Dennis, this is actually really, really good learning. And I think we are a little bit over our time, but that's fine. One last question I do want to ask you, and I forgot to ask this before. In terms of partner footprint in EMEA, right? So what are you seeing that, you know, I know that their partners were behind because they just were not able to keep up with the cloud and they just kept selling their on-prem boxes. I'm not talking about those partners, right? But for partners who figured things out that yes, cloud is a reality. And I see a lot of good partners who have built their practices either they have acquired some cloud experts as part of their business, or they have been doing themselves cloud migrations and lifting and shifting and refactoring. They're helping customers with their cloud journey. So what are you seeing in terms of what are they doing right? And maybe you want to give some example of a partner that you have guys have interfaced with in any country, doesn't really matter. And maybe based on that, what would be your advice to the partners who are trying to help the customer? Because at the end of the day, I was talking to one partner earlier today and I say, hey, forget about infrastructure. You need to follow where the applications are. If customers are moving the applications from the data center to the cloud, there's no point for you to go keep going after the infrastructure on a data center, because your applications that you are servicing, they're already in the cloud. So you have to follow the applications, your workload, the services. So in your experience, what would be your one lessons learned that you have seen what partners are doing right, and what would be your key takeaway from the partner's perspective?
So one of the things I've seen is, look at partners that initially maybe got it a little bit wrong or approached this in a different way than I see some of the partners approach right now. And it is the typical on-prem appliance solution-based partner, basically, that they for a long time they ignored cloud, kind of, or they brought individual appliances into cloud, but they didn't address the connectivity need in a much broader sense that the customer needs. And then on the complete other end of the spectrum, I've seen a lot of partners that were basically consultancy firms that were not touching any commercial product or any vendors, basically, if you will, but trying to solve everything by automating against whatever is available in cloud. And I think what I've seen in the past year is the partners that are emerging in the middle of those two worlds, that are bringing the knowledge of the cloud native constructs, but also bringing the added value of what third party vendors can bring. And I think that's the sweet spot, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we do see that movement, and you know, it's spot on what Dennis was mentioning. It's also an evolution, and also coming to think about it is that EMEA is really a partner driven sales, even much more than that I believe in North America. So we are dealing with those partners. Customers are used to deal with partners and so on. And what we see, the partners which are excelling right now are the ones which had already a traditional, let's say, outsourcing business. They were helping customers to bring them over to Office 365 to make their first steps into Azure and so on. And these are the ones which are really accelerating right now that we see. Also within the landscape, to the point of Dennis, we see quite a lot of acquisitions being made of those consultancy partners, but then now they're going to fit into, let's say, a larger enterprise reseller organization, where typically both will meet each other with the knowledge, the consultancy of getting things done and moving the application, while also the, let's say, the more traditional resellers, that they are bringing their expertise when it comes to security, networking, visibility, troubleshooting, and they do recognize that products such as and solutions such as Aviatrix are really the direction to go. So it is a new era, it is a new environment, and that also deserves a different set of solutions to be studied and also to be consumed in the public clouds. So it's an evolution on that one.
Couldn't have said it better myself, it is. Dennis, it's been absolutely great. It's been a pleasure having you both here, sharing your knowledge, your expertise, your lessons learned, etc. It's been very insightful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Edith,
for having us. Really time for a new coffee.
It's 7 p.m. over here, Dennis, I believe. I might consider something else.
It's more like a hot chocolate, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Cocoa, hot chocolate, and slippers. Sit down by the TV.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tandem. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.